Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Go Steelers! Go Steelers! Say go Steelers! Go Steelers!
Welcome to the Steelers Outpost podcast, a proud member of the Armchair All-Americans Network. It's May 17th, 2019, episode 83. This is Tom from the Washington, D.C. Outpost. Nick joins me from the Houston Outpost. And it's St. Patrick's Day, the day we're recording. And I think it's kind of appropriate for this podcast as we remember the strong ties of the Rooney family to Ireland, especially Dan Rooney, who served as the ambassador to Ireland from 2009 to 2012. More importantly, free agency frenzy is upon us.
Free agency is upon us indeed. And the NFL is getting shaped as we know it for the 2020 season. We have all realized that the Super Bowl has already been set. It's going to be the Browns versus some NFC challenger, I assume, at this point. But there have been some additions. There have been not many subtractions from the Steelers standpoint. They kept some guys. They added two new guys that we're going to be talking about, a wide receiver and a cornerback, Steven Nelson and Dante Moncrief. And speaking of the Browns in the Super Bowl, they knocked free agency into another universe by picking up a few key guys. Obviously, they were the ones who had no shame at all bringing Kareem Hunt, one of the NFL's top five running backs, into their team shortly after his domestic dispute. And if by domestic dispute, I mean shortly after we saw the video of him kicking the girl on the ground, they brought him right in a couple weeks after that. And the NFL has now passed down the suspension for him. It's only going to be 8 weeks. In my opinion, that just seems a little bit too short. I know I'm sort of going all over the place here right now, but I did want to go through. That's one of the main shaping points of their offense. 8 weeks for Kareem Hunt does ensure that he will be playing this year. To me, I feel like they should have done a whole year, honestly, and then let him back in the next year. And because I believe in rehabilitating people and giving people second chances. So I'd be fine with that. But just 8 weeks seems like it's not very serious at all. Do you have any opinion on how long it should have been, or do you think it's long enough? Or
I think you're very judgy
on guys who kick girls. I feel like I don't know. I'm the right there.
Stephen A. even agreed with that penalty. I couldn't believe it, but I don't know. How do you judge these things? It's pretty gross when you see a tape of the kind we saw. And, you know, yes, I believe in rehabilitation. The guy's basically losing, what, 60%? He's still on a rookie contract, so he's not making a lot of money to start, so he's losing a lot there. So I guess you're denying a guy his livelihood for a pretty significant part of the year. So, okay. I don't know how to judge those things, honestly.
Sure. That's true. You do forfeit half your salary for the year. So it's not like they only gave him four games or whatever, but I just think it would have been a harder stance if they gave him a year and then let him back in and then let's have at it, because he's going to start right when he comes back. So obviously talking about Kareem Hunt on the Browns, the big news is Odell freaking Beckham Jr. is on the Browns out of nowhere. This happened out of nowhere, and now the Browns have probably one of the top five offenses in terms of talent in the league with Baker Mayfield, who obviously he's only in his second year, but let's face it, he tore it up last year when he was in there, and it's not taking a long time for these quarterbacks to get awesome. You pretty much can tell right away they'll be dominating by their second year. Patrick Mahomes just won MVP with a historic campaign in his first year as a starter, second year in the NFL. Carson Wentz should have been the MVP in his second year in the NFL when he got hurt. Deshaun Watson destroyed it his rookie year. You're seeing it pretty constantly now at this point. So Baker's there. You got, obviously, Odell Beckham Jr., in my opinion, really the best receiver in the NFL if he can stay healthy. He's a guy who can do everything that Antonio Brown can do in terms of route running and catching, but he's much faster and can jump out of the building and stuff like that. His best friend, Jarvis Landry, his old running mate from LSU at the other receiver position. They got David Njoku. They got Nick Chubb. They got Kareem Hunt. They're absolutely loaded. They added Sheldon Rankins, which I don't know how this guy keeps getting added to different teams, but a defensive tackle, stud Pro Bowl caliber player. They added him to that defensive line with Myles Garrett. And they're just they are now at this point the front runners in the AFC. And I think a lot of Steelers fans are kind of freaking out because the rich got richer there in Cleveland. While we saw Antonio Brown obviously get signed by the Raiders, Le'Veon Bell did end up signing with the Jets for basically less money than the Steelers offered. You can look at that in a few different ways. He got the way he explained it is he got the guarantees he wanted. He knows he's getting the $30 million for at least 2 years, and that gives him peace of mind. But honestly, the way the Steelers contract was structured, he would have gotten that money and more within the first 2 years if he had signed with the Steelers originally. Like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that's basically how it works out. And the only way he couldn't have gotten it, because the argument everyone is trying to give is that, well, it's guaranteed money for the Jets. It's 100% no matter what happens to him. If he blows out his knee, he gets this, you know, whatever the guarantee number was. But I would just counter and say, yes, you're right. But if you look at the Steelers, he would have made that same money in the first 2 years. And some people want to say, well, what if he blew out his knee in the first year? What would happen then? So, well, the Steelers wouldn't sign the guy to a huge contract and then watch him get a knee injury and then cut him the year after. I mean, his leg would have to fall off for that to happen. So worst case scenario, he's getting the first 2 years. But he took a little bit of an L on that when we thought that there would be somebody out there who would be down to pay him more than Todd Gurley or David Johnson. He didn't get more than either one of those guys.
I think everybody's looking at the math, right? I mean, how much more is he going to add at that price tag when you can get these rookie contracts for a song? There's just too many examples of guys who come in their freshman year and tear it up.
Yeah, well, he's going to make them better, that's for sure. But it is interesting to see that his market was a little lukewarm, and it does sort of seem like he lost that bet. I mean, a lot of Steelers fans, we want to say he lost that bet because obviously we're hurt to the core of us, and he doesn't want to ever admit that he made the wrong decision there. But it sort of seems like you're on a worse team now. Sure, they have somewhat of an upward trajectory, but it's not like the Browns, who are obviously going to be competing heavily. You went to another team that's not as good. You missed a lot of time and $14.5 million that you would have had in the bank no matter what. So,
I agree with you about the Browns trajectory, but let's talk about the cost of that trajectory. And I just looked at this. Over the last 16 years, they have had three seasons when they weren't fourth in the division. They've had 1 year when they had a winning record, when they had the double digit record. So it took a long time to build up that war chest and a lot of suffering in Cleveland. And I'm still not convinced that these pieces are going to come together so fluidly, but we shall see.
Yeah, exactly. I think that they definitely should be the favorite. They were already looking like the favorite before they added Odell Beckham Jr. Just in terms of talent, they got it right now. And you're right. It's because they sucked so badly that the rules of the NFL are so that if you suck, we're going to give you all the opportunities to acquire better players by higher draft positions. And then they didn't have anybody good that they were paying, so they're able to trade for guys and sign them in free agency. So they are that good right now. But do I think they're a shoe-in for first place? Not at all. I think that the Steelers are almost neck and neck with them. And the Steelers, unfortunately, you know, they never have that sexy free agency period that you see with a team like the Browns or something like that. But they did make two moves that were very solid that sort of mirrored the moves they made last year. They wait till the smoke clears till you get all the initial blue chip players who are going to get overpaid by teams who have the money to do so. So, you know, I support the Jets signing a CJ Mosley, even though they seem to be overpaying him. It's like, hey, that's the price of doing business and you got money to spare. The Steelers don't really have money to spare, but they made two solid signings in wide receiver Dante Moncrief and cornerback Steven Nelson. So we'll start with Steven Nelson. Steven Nelson's a cornerback from the Kansas City Chiefs. So already that's a red flag. That's a red alert. They had one of the worst defenses in history last year. They had Patrick Mahomes on their team, and they were scoring 40 points in a game and losing those games. So it's a little bit scary, but I watched a little bit of him, and I talked to some of my good friends who are Chiefs fans, particularly John Danner, shout out to JD. But the notebook out on Steven Nelson is this. He's not a supremely talented first round talent type of guy. He's athletic and he's fast, but he's not super fast. But he's a very aggressive cornerback. He's certainly an upgrade over Cody Sensabaugh. And he goes for a lot of picks. He had 4 last year, which, of course, equals the amount of interceptions that the Steelers defensive backs had as a whole last year. So that's nice. You got someone who's actually very aggressive and tries to take the ball away. He was one of the leaders in penalties down the field as a result of some of that of aggression. And since he's not like a, you know, upper tier athlete, first round talent, like I was saying, he doesn't have, you know, it's not like you just signed, you know, Marcus Peters, who's another example of a gambler who gets burned a lot, but he makes huge plays. I'd say it might be like a poor man's Marcus Peters, but he specializes in playing man-to-man, where the Chiefs played almost exclusively man-to-man last year. And the Steelers, over the second half of the year, played more man-to-man than any other team in the league, surprisingly, towards the end there. And so he really fits what they wanted. A guy who's a starter, he's tough, he plays through, you know, he's always on the field. He is aggressive. He's going to try to make interceptions. He was able to do that last year. The Steelers need that, and the Steelers want guys who can play some man. Are you going to be able to get Jalen Ramsey in free agency if they're the Steelers? No, but I think Steven Nelson was a good signing because he fits what the Steelers needed, and he'll start on the outside. And I think the Steelers finally have their first set of at least competent cornerbacks in the last 8 years or so with Hilton, Nelson, and Joe Hayden. And then if you can keep Cody Sensabaugh, that's a nice first backup. And obviously you have Cam Sutton.
Seems like a classic Steelers sign-up. 3-year contract, reportedly worth $25.5 million. You know, not pocket change, right, but definitely not some of these eye-popping numbers we've been seeing from the teams going after free agencies right out of the gate.
Last year, the Steelers waited for the smoke to clear, and then they signed John Bostic, who nobody was looking at an inside linebacker. And they also signed Morgan Burnett. And those did really seem like solid signings. They didn't turn out well, okay? And I think that Morgan Burnett, his was actually a little bit more due to injuries, which was actually one of his problems at the end of his tenure in Green Bay. So they rolled the dice on that. It didn't work out because by the last 4 or 5 games, he was playing better in Pittsburgh. It's just at this point, it seems like it's better to move on. We all assume that they would cut Morgan Burnett, but it hasn't happened yet. So he actually might be sticking around, and maybe that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world because he did acquit himself a little bit more nicely in the last 4 games, even though we all want to hate him because he signed a contract. But either way, these are the things that I'm talking about. Like when you look at the money for what Earl Thomas signed for, I do think, you know, I would have liked the Steelers to be aggressive with somebody like that. But these are guys. Steven Nelson is a guy who can plug in and he can start. They tried to offer the deal to Bradley Roby, the cornerback from Denver. That would have been really ideal because that's more of a first, second round caliber type of athlete. He denied the deal that Pittsburgh gave him, and he went to go take a 1-year prove it deal. I think in Houston, I could be wrong, but I think it was in Houston because he wants to see if he can really cash in big time the next year. So can you really fault them for that? I guess not. Maybe he just had his mind up with a 1-year deal. So you didn't get Roby. That would have been nicer, but you did get a guy who is definitely a starter and does what the Steelers need with the man-to-man and trying to take the ball away. So they did what they could do with what was available.
So it takes a little pressure off in the draft.
It does, yeah.
Which we'll be talking about momentarily.
Exactly. Why don't we, while we're still on the subject, Dante Moncrief is a receiver that they signed. This is a good signing, man. The way I look at Dante Moncrief is like, break glass in case of emergency. DHB and Justin Hunter are going to be gone this year. Let's just say Dante Moncrief will be a huge upgrade over Justin Hunter because Dante Moncrief has had some real production. I think he scored like 3 TDs against the Steelers when he was with the Colts, but he's a guy who can get downfield and make big plays, but he's kind of been a forgotten man. And I think he gets a little more crap than he deserves in the media because he hasn't had very productive seasons this past 2 years. Well, last year he was playing with Blake Bortles. Nobody within 100-mile vicinity of Blake Bortles has a productive season. Look what happened to the Miami Dolphins. You think that was their fault? No. It was Blake Bortles' fault. It's Bortles' disease. It's like ground zero for bad passing offenses. And then the year before that, he was playing with Jacoby Brissett in a year when the Colts weren't sure if Andrew Luck was going to come back or not. But he's the kind of guy who can go in and he can start a few games for you at the beginning of the season, like they had Justin Hunter do a few years ago when we were waiting for Juju to get his sea legs. And he can make plays. And he's a guy who's done that in the NFL. He's not a consistent guy. I don't know if I'd call him a really reliable number two or anything like that. But assuming the Steelers can get a blue chip wide receiver within the first two rounds in the draft, probably in the second round, because obviously this whole draft revolves and relies on the Steelers acquiring middle linebacker Devin Bush from Michigan, which we'll get into in a minute. But if they can get a guy in the second or maybe even the third, obviously Steelers have had a lot of success with that type of stuff. You know, this is a guy who can hold the fort down at the beginning and then, you know, provide some depth as well. I think some national media are trashing the Steelers for signing Dante Moncrief, thinking that this is our final plan. Dante Moncrief isn't a final plan. He just makes the receiver room better.
He does. And if I'm trying to dig up this statistic I read earlier in the week that other than AB, I think Dante Moncrief is up there with the most number of uncatchable passes thrown his way.
Yeah, he played with
Blake
Brooks.
Not surprising given this source. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's
surprising about AB.
It wouldn't – and honestly, like, if we get to the end of this offseason, I mean, it's not for sure that the Steelers are going to get a receiver within the first two rounds. You want them to, but you've seen how it's gone with running corners or running inside linebackers the past 2 years. If they don't have a guy available to pick at the time when they're picking, you know, if they don't have a second-round graded receiver available to them in the second round, they're probably not going to take him, you know, unless there's no other good option. So you could see a situation where if the draft just doesn't break the Steelers' way and they don't get the receiver they want, Dante Moncrief might have to start more than you'd like at the outside. And that honestly, it wouldn't be the worst case scenario in the world. You know, like you still have Juju, Eli Rogers, who we re-signed, Switzer, Vance McDonald. Hopefully he plays 90% of the games. Anyways, you got some options. Washington, hopefully he comes along. So it wouldn't be a trash wide receiver room, let's say. But of course, we do hope they upgrade on him.
So solid pickups, not overpaying. And also, so we extended three current guys on the roster. You want to talk about them?
Yes. Bud Dupree's $9.2 million was guaranteed today for his five sacks per year. I will say this. We've talked as much trash about Bud as anybody else over the years because it's clear the guy's never going to develop. He's never going to live up to his first round status as a pass rusher. But I will say this, man. Every year he's played through a major injury, whether it's the shoulder. I mean, it's been the shoulder a lot of the times. Or did he dislocate the shoulder like halfway through the last year or something and play the whole year with it? This could be the first year where he actually plays healthy. And like we said before, he's a decent starter. He's like a C-plus starter. And if you get rid of him, you need a plan to replace him. And I know everybody wants to replace him with Justin Houston, who was recently released by the Kansas City Chiefs. And maybe that is in the cards. And that could be pretty cool. But it might not be. It sort of depends on if Justin Houston wants to take the money that the Steelers have available to him or if he wants to make the most money he can. But if Bud Dupree's your starter, you're doing okay. I think he could go from five to maybe even seven sacks if he's not playing injured the whole year. Because face it, that's a big deal, playing injured the whole year. And he's had significant ones that would keep other people out. So at least that's another position where, like, you can't just release him and then not get Justin Houston and then get stuck starting Chickalo for the whole year, who they also assigned. Extended for $4 million per year. Apparently the Patriots were trying to get him, but it's a little disappointing with the Chickalo re-signing. He's a great depth piece and a core special teams player, which is really critical, but it's just a little disappointing seeing that room not improved and putting so much money into two guys who are below the line. I would hope that Ola Adeniyi earns that third spot behind Watt and Dupree instead of Chickalo, but you know, so be it. They kept some continuity. They obviously lost Jesse James in free agency to the Detroit Lions. That's a really great role player guy. We were happy about keeping Finney and Foster, and it just goes into that depth thing we're talking about. At least Chickalo, you can put him on the field, and he's not going to be a disaster, and obviously he gives you a lot on special teams. It just feels wrong to be putting over, you know, like $13 million into Chickalo and Dupree. Seems a little ridiculous, but I think that's just kind of the corner that they got backed into.
Well, I think Dupree's actually going to – I think your number is within reach because you got Danny McCullers back for 2 years. And I think right. with yet another year under his belt, there's going to be even further pressure up the middle.
How much did they give him?
They still haven't listed it yet.
Hopefully it was, you know, a couple of ham sandwiches because that just seems – the guy hasn't had an ounce of production any year that he's been in Pittsburgh. He must be like the coolest guy ever if they keep re-signing him.
He's a locker room guy.
He's a locker room guy. So they've kept some of the depth with re-signing Tyson Alulu and McCullers, again, a little uninspiring. But another guy they re-signed with somebody who we love is Eli Rogers. Got a 2-year extension. I love this. I think Rogers and Switzer are going to be in that old Sanders versus 84 conversation in terms of two dogs, one bone. I mean, you have a deep slot room. Those guys could both be starters on many NFL teams, I think. And Switzer's another one who played the whole year last year with some sort of ankle sprain, apparently. So he looked good last year. I'm excited to see if he can actually get that second gear he was missing last year, if he's healthy. So, like I said, if there isn't a blue chip receiver added in the draft, you don't have a great receiver room, but you don't have a bad one either. And adding Eli Rogers is nice because he's done some good things in his Steelers career. Obviously not a guy that you can rely on consistently though.
Well, what's odd is that they signed him early. He had, he was supposed to cost what I'm looking at the numbers here, $720,000 this season, minimum salary for him, but they, so 2-year contract extension. Interestingly, he's bulking up by turning vegan.
Bulking up by turning
vegan. If you heard the interview earlier this week, yeah.
Vegan, huh? A lot of NFL players do that, but you got to add some sort of, you know, Chris Sims talks about this, you know, being an ex-NFL player and a guy who eats sort of in the vegan reign. But if you're like an NFL player, they do talk about needing to get that protein from actual meat to get big enough to sustain the pounding of a season, but he's a little guy. He's a little quick guy to begin with. So maybe he's just seeing if he can go from a 4.5 or, you know, a 4.48 to a 4.3 with the extra 3 pounds he'll lose from being a vegan.
This is America. It's with a vegan with NFL players.
Yeah, you can't do that in Pittsburgh. It just doesn't seem
especially
right.
In Pittsburgh.
Somebody get that guy a Manny Brown sandwich.
All right, so we're going to start our draft review this week, and we're going to focus on wide receivers. So you've spent a lot of time looking at tape.
Yes.
Who have you chosen? Who are we going to look at?
So we're going to look at a couple guys. I gave you a preview of one guy who's the apple of my eye. I tweeted at John Ledyard had tweeted this guy as well, another big Steelers analyst, one of the guys who runs the Draft Network, which if you guys want to get really in-depth into the draft – that site is unbelievable, www.thedraftnetwork.com. It's really in the weeds. It gets pretty specific and pretty nerdy with it, but it's a beautiful site. It's very easy to navigate, and they have breakdowns for like all the major players and stuff like that. Just a shout out to John Ledyard, another good Steelers analyst. I know some people out there don't like him. They think he skews negative, but he's got good things to say. And I just sent that tweet out, I think, this morning. He's hoping that the Steelers pick up this Hakeem Butler, who was the first guy I listed for you guys last week. Specifically because I think the Steelers in this draft need to target an outside receiver who can stretch the field, who can make big plays down the field and occupy you know, that role or some of the duties that the trader occupied while he was here for 9 glorious years. But Hakeem Butler from Iowa State is one guy we're going to look at. He's a 6'6 monster who ran a 4.48. He's very good. That would be a dream come true. Also going to look at N'Keal Henry from Arizona State, another big dude, 6'3, ran a 4.5. He's not the burner that Hakeem Butler is, but he's definitely a playmaker. Another one is Deebo Samuel, slot receiver from South Carolina. He's a very popular pick for the Steelers. I don't know how much we'll get there when we get there. And then some guys who are hopefully more like second, third round guys. Because those guys, I think if the Steelers got into a situation, they might have to take one of those guys in the first round, and they'd be lucky if one of those first three slid to them at their draft pick. Oh, N'Keal Harry. Sorry. Here, I'm seeing I just messed that up. But they would need to draft those first three guys maybe in the first, and they'd be lucky if they slid to them in the second, it's looking like. These next two guys, they could pick up either in the second or maybe the third, and it's two Ohio State receivers. Terry McLaurin from Ohio State and Paris Campbell. This is my guy, so we'll save the best for last. Best for last. So just a quick review on Hakeem Butler from last week. He is he's some sort of alien. He's a godlike creature. I don't know what rules were broken when they created him, because the man is 6'6". He runs a 4.48, and he's not just a Martavis Bryant, which means go straight or catch a screen pass. Nope, this guy can actually work underneath and make some nice cuts, especially at his size. The negatives are he does struggle with some drops, but I'd say most of the giant receivers, the big playmakers, they do struggle with drops. It's kind of part of it. Like Martavis, we used to say if he could just bring his catch percentage from like 50 to 60, he'd have five more touchdowns a year. But was it worth it having Martavis? Totally. Yes, it was. Even the beginning of Sammy Coates' career, his short lasted five game stint of goodness before he tumbled away. He had a bad catch percentage, but it was still worth it to have a guy who can stretch the field like that, because there's just only a few guys in the world who can just blaze past NFL defenders and score long touchdowns. And it also makes the defense respect them in a different way, where you can't just shade all your coverage to Juju, because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of that offense running through Juju. So Hakeem Butler is really complete in this way. He's humongous. He can make downfield plays, but he can also work underneath as well. And he's a willing blocker and everything like that. I'd like to see him get a little bit more nasty, which I feel like is something you see a lot in those big guys. But the drops, it doesn't really bother me that much. That would be a huge grab. I don't know if he'll last all the way to the Steelers pick in the second round. Some people even think he might go in the first. But if he's there in the second round and the Steelers don't take him, we're shutting the podcast down. That's the first guy. Hakeem Butler. Okay.
Second guy, we did correct the name. I had to look that up really quick. And it's Nikhil Harry from Arizona State.
He's on the all-name team. So this guy is another giant playmaker, but he's not really a burner. So Nikhil Harry from Arizona State, out of all the players I watched so far, and I probably watched like 8 to 10 wide receivers, Nikhil Harry is the most consistent with contested catches. And he can actually go up and make back shoulder catches with his hands. Like, he'll high point the ball and jump up and grab it. He doesn't just jump up and basket catch it or anything like that. He has some, you know, poor man's Dez Bryant, maybe Anquan Boldin, Michael Crabtree type qualities in that way. He's not super fast or explosive. He's not a burner. So he's not really going to take the top off of that defense. But what I like about him is he can make those back shoulder catches downtown. And he's a very, very good open field runner for his size, particularly on screens. In one of the games I watched him play, they threw him like five screens in the first half, and he's just very economical about the way he runs on the screens, and he ends up dragging guys, and he can make a guy miss here or there. And I just found that interesting for a guy who's – he's not lumbering. This isn't Kelvin Benjamin or anything like that, but – he's a guy who doesn't burn downfield. Maybe it sort of reminds me of a Golden Tate in a way, just less quick. But Golden Tate's a guy who always confuses me why he's so good running with the ball, because he's not a burner. And he runs like – Golden Tate runs like the Roadrunner. He's like his chest is out, his head is backwards, and he's tiptoes his way for 10 yards all the time. But anyways, Nikhil Harry – not going to take the top off the defense, but he's very consistent playmaker downfield, and he's going to moss cats all day long, high pointing back shoulders and a weapon in the screen game. But, you know, obviously, if you're comparing him and Hakeem Butler, you might prefer the guy who can take the top off the defense.
Next, we have Deebo Samuel out of South Carolina.
Deebo. These guys got good names this year. It'd be nice to add a Deebo. We lost a Deebo who keeps trashing the team in the media, James Harrison, a couple years ago. But Deebo Samuel, this guy is a beast athlete, and he's a really well-respected prospect who had a big injury in his college career, which he overcame. So that sort of dipped his stock, and he kind of grew it back this coming year. So this guy, he is a running back who plays wide receiver, basically. Again, that's actually a Chris Sims term, the running back receiver, which I like that. I got to think of my own. But when I watched him, he reminded me so much of DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel, the Panthers receivers. If you watched their offense at all last year, except for when they played the Steelmen, we put them into the ground. And then our season went into the ground shortly after that. But those guys are like the Panthers had the craziest offense, where it had DJ Moore from Maryland, Curtis Samuel from Ohio State, and then obviously McCaffrey and Cam Newton. It was all these little misdirection things and quick plays just to get the ball in the receiver's hands early. Golden Tate, he's another one of these guys. You get him the ball within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, and he's going to make people miss. Well, that's what Deebo Samuel's like, except for he has the anger of God in him. This dude is 5'11", 214, but he runs a 4.48, and he is visibly explosive on tape. And he loves contact. I haven't seen many receivers who are like this. When he gets the ball on screens, which he gets many screens every game, he breaks tackles. And he's very quick twitch. I think he played a little bit like Percy Harvin-like role for South Carolina earlier in his career, where they just found ways to get him the ball, you know, like a lot of those college studs. And he just knows how to make big plays in the open field. There was one play that had me salivating against Mizzou, where he was running down the field kind of on a go route type situation, or like a fade from the slot. He was 20 yards downfield, the crappy quarterback who misses his receivers mostly at South Carolina. But the quarterback threw the ball to him, and Deebo Samuel jumped up in between two guys at 20 yards, high-pointed the ball, which is very important to me for a college receiver, because you don't see that a lot. They like to basket catch a lot. And if you see guys who can high-point the ball, that shows you some ball skills. High-pointed it, caught it in between the two defenders, and landed like right when his feet touched the ground. Boom. He shot himself out of a cannon and changed direction and gained another 15 yards and dragged a couple guys along the way. That's just upper echelon athleticism that you can't teach. And there's other guys on this list who don't have that, and you can't get that anyway. And he has that. So he is a running back like receiver who breaks tackles, and he could bust out long runs at any point. And he had nice success in the red zone, dragging guys into the end zone and stuff like that. The only thing about him is I don't know if he can play outside. They played him like exclusively in the slot. And he's such a beast athlete, and he runs a 4.4. So you could see it would be possible for him to play the outside. But if he's never done it before, you know, I don't know if he'll be able to or not. And maybe that's just a problem the Steelers would need to deal with. It's like, hey, Juju is really good in the slot, so you'd like to find a guy on the outside, but maybe you keep Juju on the outside more, and this guy's such a good athlete that you just find a way to get him on the field and get him the ball. But I listed him at third because he's, like I said, he's not a prototypical outside guy.
Well, as we drop down the list, you actually get to the burners, the fast guys. So Terry McLaurin,
like the car.
From Ohio State, thank you.
Yeah, it's an apt name for him because – McLaurin, the guy can burn a little bit. He's not a true burner in terms of like that Mike Wallace role or even Sammy Coates role, but he can take the top off the defense, and he can catch some deep passes, maybe like a Dante Moncrief. But he doesn't have super elite speed, but he's got great footwork, and he's got great releases off the line of scrimmage. That means he doesn't get really caught up in the junk down there. And I just saw him make plays downfield at Ohio State. And that's what they said last year about James Washington at Oklahoma State. But the difference is with James Washington was I was almost shocked every time James Washington caught the ball because he's so lumbering. And I just didn't know how that was going to project at the next level of the NFL. I saw this guy at Oklahoma State who wasn't very fast and he couldn't jump very high, but he just consistently was either wide open at Oklahoma State or he would just make catches over people's head. And I didn't know how consistently are you going to make catches over people's head in the NFL? And when he started with the Steelers in the preseason, Washington, he did it a ton. He was incredible in the preseason, and it was all mirroring the success he had at OK State. He was catching the ball over dudes' heads. And then that just disappeared during the regular season. So I guess we'll find out. But the difference with Terry McLaurin is I saw him make plays down the field, and he was getting himself open with his routes and his ability to finish plays at the end there. And so he's not really a number one receiver. He's 6 foot, but he ran a 4.35. So that he has the burner time. He wasn't just destroying everyone like a Mike Wallace, but he is like a number two or three receiver who would fill a nice role in that, you know, like, okay, this guy's going outside day one. I don't know if he's going to start day one or not, but he fills that exact role of what we're looking for with an outside receiver who takes the top off, and he could be a guy that you might be able to get in the third round, maybe the second round, depending on how they like him or how the draft's breaking.
And then we get to the number one. I guess he's tied for the first fastest, Paris Campbell.
Paris Campbell is sort of a combination of the last two guys we talked about. First off, he's got the coolest name, maybe in the draft. So that alone, we might have to just take into account. Because if you have Juju and Paris on the outside, I don't know how teams defend that. You got Vance in the middle. And then we won't throw the ball to the Jameses too much. But either way, Deebo Samuel, we called him a running back-like receiver. Terry McLaurin, the guy who takes the top off the defense. Well, Paris Campbell is 6 foot, and he ran 205, and he ran the fastest 40 in the combine for wide receivers. He tied at number one, 4.31, which makes it confusing to why Ohio State played him exclusively in the slot and never ran him on go routes. All he ran were these like little Z outs and hook routes into the middle, but then they would run him on reverses and stuff. And this guy was liable to take a reverse 90 yards for a touchdown at any point in the game. And 6 foot, 205, he's got that perfect frame where he's strong enough to break tackles and make people miss a little bit, but fast enough where he's going to burn. This guy just, he's a great athlete and this great open field vision, running back like. Now, he didn't break as many tackles and he wasn't as violent as a Deebo Samuel was when he was running, but he did seem much faster and more decisive with his cuts. Now, I don't know why they didn't run this guy down the field, but he runs a 4.31. That's burner speed, right? So you could project him to be an outside receiver, similar to what we said as Deebo Samuel, at the next level. But, you know, like we said before, we haven't seen him play out there. There's a different set of skills you have to use to release and to get off the line against number one and number two corners. You have to be able to track the ball down the field when you're going on go routes. That is a specific skill. It's not as easy as just running out there and catching it. You got to learn how to work the boundary and toe taps and stuff like that. So it is a little bit of a projection, but what I like about him is for some reason, they're not talking about him in the same breath as a Deebo Samuel as much. And I don't see any drop off from either one of the players. And this is a guy who'd be available in the second or third round, hopefully. There is some rumor that it could go in the first, but he could be available for the Steelers, and it's just such an incredible value. And if you get a 4-3 guy with Ben Roethlisberger, there's really almost no better quarterback in the league to put a deep ball guy with, and he could really turn him into something. So the only negatives is I didn't get to see him catch any of those really contested balls where he's high-pointing at. I didn't get to see him catch those deep balls, but he just made plays constantly, and he was voted team captain, and he's a big leader as well. And the Steelers could use more of those leadership-type qualities, obviously, at the receiver position specifically. But he also came into the combine, and I think he said something like, "My name's Paris Campbell, and y'all better watch out," or something like that. So he's got the confidence, too, and the swag, which is necessary for a receiver, in my opinion.
Well, those are our top five. You had a few more listed here, and I'm not sure we need to go through them, but one target of interest, Hollywood Brown.
Yeah, I don't know if I could have another member of that family in the Steelers, you know, facility, and I honestly wonder if the Steelers would take him. If for anybody who doesn't know, Marquise Hollywood Brown is Antonio Brown's cousin, one of the best receivers in college, was Kyler Murray's main target at Oklahoma. He's 5'9". He is tiny, 165 pounds. And he runs a 4.3. He is a true burner. He is a downtown, take the top off the defense guy. Sometimes it could be tough with, you know, the schools like Oklahoma because they seem, you know, like they're kind of open a lot. But he's definitely a guy who can take the top off the defense and would fit what the Steelers need. He doesn't have, you know, the punt returner like agility like number 84 had. But he's a guy that I wouldn't be totally shocked if they randomly took him in the first round or something like that. But
You're not sure you'd gamble on the DNA.
Yeah, I'd probably hedge my bets on that. But if I were to bet on it, I would definitely use my bookie, because my bookie offers bettors in all major markets an entertaining lineup of gaming options that let you do prop bets. You can bet on the draft. Will the Steelers draft a first rounded player in the first round? Will it actually happen this year? I don't know. By the way, we need to talk about Devin Bush later, but maybe we'll save that for next week. plenty of time. But anyways, if I am betting on the Steelers taking a first round player, I'm doing it on my bookie, and I'm probably going to do it on their mobile site because you can do it on your phone. It's easy to navigate. They got a sleek design that offers for that easy navigation. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. Visit mybookie.ag online today, and don't forget to use the promo code OUTPOST25 when creating your account to claim up to $1,000 in free play. Let's claim up to $1,000 in free play. You play, you win, you get paid.
Speaking of getting paid, did you read the story, the critique on the Steelers' approach to free agency, and that the Steelers might need to change the way they do deals?
I didn't read the story, but you and I have talked about that over the past year. They might need to reconsider how they do guaranteed deals because they sort of lost AB and Le'Veon Bell because they don't want to give out guaranteed money like that. And I just think that players' mindsets are sort of changing. I think there have been some, you know, AB and Odell getting traded in the offseason. The same offseason has changed the way people think about this. Le'Veon Bell being the first real prime player to sit out a whole year to wait for a deal because solely of guaranteed money. They really might have to look at how they do that, you know, especially with what's happening in the NBA and stuff like that. So I didn't read the article, but, you know, if they lose Juju down the line, then they got to switch it up.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that. I mean, what could you have done about Antonio? You made him the number one wide receiver, and he broke halfway through into his contract. And the thing with Le'Veon, again, an unprecedented move. And yeah, we keep making this claim that he would have gotten just as much money with the Steelers as he gotten guaranteed effectively because the Steelers complete their contracts. But how much more would that have been for the Steelers to lock down a little bit more money? They had no idea what a competitive team would have offered in that case.
Right, but it doesn't change the fact that they do offer less guaranteed money than any other team in the league besides like the Giants. And Le'Veon Bell did cite the guaranteed money as the reason for why he was holding out. He said that repeatedly throughout the holdout. And then just after he signed with the Jets, he said like, yeah, I know the deal, you know, it looks like Pittsburgh offered me more money, but here's the whatever the guarantee was for the Jets, and that's why I stayed. So it was directly tied to guaranteed money. I'm with you. That's only two guys, but and really one of them, Le'Veon's the one you can truly say was strictly about guaranteed money. AB, other things went into it. But I'm just saying they're going to need to look at it if it happens again. But overall, you know, they've done a good job of keeping players.
Well, you don't know that until you start looking at the teams that do these large guarantees because the Steelers are able to remain competitive. You know, again, look at what the Browns have done over the last 16 years. The Steelers stay competitive because they don't overpay.
Yeah.
And maybe you do some guarantees, but does that result in a competitive product? Or do you drain your resources to bring in a few so-called superstars and then take the money away from offensive line? Well, let's not talk about DBs.
Right.
But take it away from other places where you need to invest.
No, that's a good point. I guess the jury's still out. If the Steelers win the Super Bowl this year or next year, whatever it is, I mean, we keep going back to this paradox where it's like if James Conner is giving you 80 to 90 percent of the production at a fraction of the cost, I mean, not even a tenth of the cost, then you are able to sign Stephen. Well, I wish I could say you were able to sign Bradley Roby, but I guess we got Stephen Nelson to write home about. But you're right. I mean, you only get a certain amount of money to spend on your team. And I would really like to have made an Earl Thomas signing or something like that. I guess they didn't get to use that, the Le'Veon money directly as that. But if you're looking at it from an economic standpoint, you know, James Conner, 80% of the production for a fraction of the cost, it's like almost just math at that point. I mean, obviously there's things that Le'Veon accounts for that don't show up on the stat sheet in the way that teams have to prepare for you. And that's why I'm only saying James Conner gives you 80% of the production when in fact last year he gave you more. I mean, he had better average and he was making better yards and everything like that. But I guess the jury's still out, but I do think it is significant that, you know, the two best offensive players really in the history of the franchise left at the same time. So I'm with you. I don't think you need to change it right now, but I think it's something that you need to look at going forward because times change. But the jury's still out for me.
Hey, I'm going to link a story from today's Washington Post on the website that talks about the success of these free agents and how many, what percentage of free agents are still on the team that picked them up 2 years later. And in other news, in AAF news, Johnny Manziel is back.
Thank God.
He signed with the Memphis Express.
Well, it's probably a good thing. I mean, I don't think the guy's going to succeed. He's shown that over and over again. He just keeps getting lower. I mean, I hope he gets his mental facilities in order. But I think we said that the first week when we did the AAF segment, that like somebody with a huge name like Johnny Manziel might help that league. There's only a few guys who would have that kind of clout. If like Tebow came out for retirement to go play for them. Guys who I'm not necessarily saying will be good, but they're at least way more famous than Zach Mettenberger.
Right, who he's replacing, who just got hurt, by the way.
Yeah, that looked bad. I actually saw the replay. He broke his ankle or something, and he kind of got caught in a blender there.
All right, I think that does it for this week. Who are we looking at? What position are we looking at next week?
Well, we might as well take the cat out of the bag and look at the inside linebackers. And if by inside linebackers, we might as well just look at Devin Bush, because it's Devin Bush or bust for the Steelers in the draft. They did not pick up any of the free agent inside linebackers, and we lost LJ Fort, the man who should have been a starter the whole year last year. But now you don't have a single linebacker on the team who can cover. You got Williams, Bostic for the time being, and Matkevich. That is bottom of the barrel in terms of coverage ability. Bush obviously tested off the charts at the combine. There's some people that think the Steelers will be able to land him at 20. There are some people that think they would only have to trade up a couple spots. But basically, after Devin Bush, there's nothing. I think the guy from Alabama is someone to take a look at, but he's not a blue chip type player. Another Devin White, the inside linebacker from LSU, is pretty much going to go in the top 12. So he's kind of out. So if you don't get him and you don't get Bush, the Steelers are going into next year with Vince Williams and John Bostic again, and that just cannot happen. So who knows? Maybe the Steelers are going to use that extra third-round pick they got for the greatest receiver in the world, besides Odell Beckham Jr., and maybe they'll have to leverage that to trade up for Devin Bush, and it'll be a great fit. I think one of the Steelers reporters, Tom Jaggi or something like that. I don't know. I'm butchering the guy's name, but somebody posted the combine stats for Devin White, Devin Bush versus Ryan Shazier. I think I retweeted it. It's absurd. Shazier got first place in every category that they listed, every drill, you know, height, weight, everything like that. It really just shows how unbelievable Shazier was and how crazy it was they got him when they got him in the draft.
Hey, we want to hear your feedback. Check us out on Instagram at Steelers Outpost. Hit us up on Twitter at Steelers Outpost. Leave us a note on the website, SteelersOutpost.com, or shoot us an email at SteelersOutpost@gmail.com. Until next week, see you next week, and go Steelers.
Go Steelers. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.